I'm Joe. I'm a guitarist.
I'm Jack Sharp. I sing and play guitar.
Tom Watt, drums.
And I'm Dan. I play bass.
Okay, so we're here at the Leeds Trinity, Holy Trinity Church. I was just wondering, have you guys ever played a venue like this before?
We were just thinking about that earlier on. We played a converted church in Liverpool, didn't we? Alma de Cuba. But that was kind of converted to be a venue, so it was kind of acoustically treated and had a mezzanine and stuff. This is just a church.
This is a raw church.
Yeah.
So how are you finding the kind of... when we came in, you were doing your sound check. I was just wondering how you're finding the sound.
Reverby.
Yeah, very echoey. But it's kind of like... I knew it would be weird, but it kind of sounds good, I think.
Every time I play the drums, it sounds like When the Levee Breaks, but that's a good thing in my eyes, you know. So
some of the melodies are quite plain song in some of our songs, and maybe they suit that kind of setting as well, you know.
Doesn't suit noisy guitar songs.
Perhaps less so,
yeah. There's a balance. Maybe she's a cappella. Yeah.
So basically it's good for the folk, but not for the rock.
Yeah. So, I mean... I don't want to kind of cover all ground, but I probably will. I mean, you've obviously got a kind of root in a kind of late 60s, early 70s rock. I was just wondering, to start with, if you could kind of tell the listeners what kind of influences you draw from and, you know, why you kind of came to the decision to almost, you know, do this for yourself.
What do you mean? Make the record kind of, but
just make the Wolf People sound of, you know, kind of.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's an important point to make, because it's not. I don't think it's ever like a decision with us. I don't know if it is with any other bands, but it's not like we kind of sat down and said, right, we want to make some music. What kind of music do we want to make? It's just we were making some music, and this is what it sounded like. You know, we all get in a room, we play, and whatever sounds good to us, whatever is exciting, that's what ends up being a song, and that's what ends up getting recorded. In terms of influence, for this album, it was definitely like a kind of mixture of, I suppose, three main things. Like a lot of traditional stuff that I was listening to, a lot of traditional music, a lot of kind of 60s, like 50s and 60s revivalist stuff. A lot of like kind of underground British rock bands who kind of never really made it. And a lot of like Scandinavian, like Swedish and Finnish psychedelic rock.
Okay, so a good mix.
And as well as loads of other stuff, but that's like kind of mainly what we were listening to and getting excited by while we were making this record. And I think that's, you know, it's quite obvious to see when you listen to it.
Also, I think we try and play in we listen to all this stuff and get really excited by it. But when we all get into a room together, we actually, whether it's by our own photo design or whatever, it ends up. We can't really play in. I've always played like this, and I've been told off in other bands for playing too many solos, but luckily these guys let me do
play
it.
Play more solos.
And it just so happens that we can. It just sort of happens, doesn't it? We think about all these things, and then we end up sounding like us anyway, don't we?
I think we're kind of as musicians, I think, like, it's fair to say, like, stop me if I'm wrong, everyone else, but we're like. In a lot of ways, we're all like quite limited as musicians, and we can only kind of like do certain things. We're kind of trying to emulate these things that, like, you know, these kind of records by people who are much better than us. And you kind of have to work out ways of like, right, okay, well, I can't really do that, but what can I do? You know, so we're kind of striving to do this thing. I think the kind of trying to reach that and not quite getting there is maybe like the has defined the sound of what of who we are. You know. Yeah. And also the fact that we're doing it, all the recording stuff, we're doing on our own, so we're kind of finding our own way with that. And that's an interesting part of how it ends up sounding as well, I think.
So tell me a bit more about that then. So you say you're recording, I mean, how does a recording process then work for you as a band? You're sniggering.
It's quite a mess, basically, but we're just experimenting, basically. The way it worked with this one was a lot of rehearsing and jamming, and sort of I'm a sound engineer, we've all got sort of sound engineering experience, so we record pretty much everything we do, and then sort of turn it into songs, and then we, with this one, it was quite interesting. We basically got a load of gear and got one of our friends who works in a studio, and just headed up to Joe's house, who lives in Yorkshire,
Skipton.
and just set up in his house, which was quite a big experiment, really. There was good aspects of it, but I don't think it's something we'd do again. And he did a lot of fixing, but we certainly got some interesting sounds, didn't we?
Yeah. I think when we went there to do that, I seem to remember us saying, right, OK, we'll do this, but we're only going to do it for like a week and it's not going to cost a lot. So if it goes horribly wrong, if we come back and it doesn't sound right, then we'll just scrap it and we'll start again. We use it as like a kind of rehearsal week. That's fine. And I think it probably sounded just good enough not to do that, but bad enough so that we had to spend loads and loads of time fixing stuff and sorting stuff out. But I think in the end, the kind of the atmosphere of that, of spending that nice week in Yorkshire, comes across. It was kind of worth the hassle that we went through to do it.
It's really nice to kind of conceive the recording of an album in a really nice place. The last album was a really nice location in Wales, and this one was a beautiful place. I mean, it did rain the whole time, but it was a really nice place, and I think that's really important. A lot of work went into it at other locations after that, but no, it was great.
So for you then, what does it kind of mean, playing in Yorkshire? Is it a kind of homecoming kind of gig, or?
I'm a bit of a turncoat because I'm from Lancashire originally, and I've defected over the border, and it means a lot actually, because I think it's quite nice to put Skipton on the map. I think if I don't want to tell anyone where the house is, but but yeah, it meant a lot because I actually rented the house from the landlord under the proviso that we would. I only took the house because it was on its own, and I wanted to record the album here. So I said, look, I'll have it, but can we record a 4-piece noisy rock band in the front room? So yeah, it'd be good to drive past the house in future and think, oh, that's where Fane was recorded. It'd be quite nice actually. So
I mean, I've seen you play live before in, I think it was the Brudenell Social Club in Leeds.
Yeah.
And there is quite a heavier sound live, and also I was just wondering, like with songs like, I think it's Tiny Circle, where you've got the kind of flute holding it together. I mean, how do you feel like they translate live when you've obviously got less instrumentation, or do you kind of adapt them, or?
We've got problems with that, haven't we?
A little bit. I mean, like I've never personally thought about it. You know, apart from maybe the first gig we did without Ross.
I think we've actually had more problems with people pointing it out, going, oh, I really missed the flute, and we were like, well, hang on, we wrote it without the flute.
Yeah.
And it was just because he's a great friend of ours, and he joined in on it.
He was just hanging around at
rehearsals. He was just hanging around, and he just bashing it out. Yeah. And then suddenly you get like a million people saying, oh, you're just ripping Jethro Tull off.
Yeah, yeah.
But
at the time, I personally had hardly ever heard any Jethro Tull.
This is the weird thing. It always comes up, and I think since after Ross left the band... I probably know more about Jethro Tull now just through people talking about it and me going, oh, well, I may as well listen to some of this.
I knew a lot about Finnish psych and prog and Scandinavian sort of like prog movement, but not much about a lot of obvious, those kind of prog bands from England. It's weird. A lot of gaps in our record collection, really.
So it may be from kind of osmosis or...
it could be. I think, actually, we like the kind of core elements of... the Jethro Tull sound, I mean, even if you take the flute out of it, there is like there's kind of that like blues rock element, there's and there is like certainly later on there was a lot of folk going on in there, and some kind of like jazz elements as well, and we've basically just maybe come to the same conclusions, and it's, you know, obviously they came to those conclusions 40 years ago, but we're a bit late. But I think, you know, it's just by accident really that we've ended up sounding a bit like, because I spent ages saying, oh, you know, I don't think it sounds like Jethro Tull at all, and then you hear certain songs and you're like, oh, actually, yeah, I know what you mean.
I think live it's got heavier because of the riff's quite punchy, and when you're playing live you tend to be a bit more nervous and a bit more, you get into it more, and it's one of those riffs you can really bash out, and I do find myself playing it really hard. And I think it's one of them, yeah, it just gets heavier and heavier the more. It's really easy to make it sound heavier, actually. But it happens with a lot of stuff, because you tend to be, you've had a couple of beers and you tend to wig out a bit more, which you can't do it in the studio.
I think the reason generally we're a bit heavier live is because we spent ages like playing in little clubs like Down the Bill and stuff, and where people didn't really care about what you were doing. And it's like, you come on and you want to make a bit of an impact, so you know, you just bash stuff out. and you get a kind of punk attitude to it, like, right, you're going to enjoy this, you're going to listen to this, and you're not, I'm not going to give you any choice. So that's kind of like where that's... No, you know. Totally. And it's fun as well. It's more fun.
Johnny Circle's sort of an important one, because I think it probably is the first song we properly wrote as a band. The first one we recorded as a band was Karatekas, but Jack wrote that and we learned it pretty much. Maybe just developed the ending, but it was pretty much like complete as a song. But Tiny Circle, we actually, is the first thing, and it set the template for how we write in some ways. And though Ross is still on that one, because he was, he was very much active in the band when we were doing that. It is kind of like a transition point, yeah. And I think it pointed the way to the future and what we've done. You know, the sort of two albums since then.
Okay, so what would your message be then to the people maybe on the YouTube channel who just go, you're a Jethro Tull ripoff, or you're just a retro, you know, kind of, I don't know, mining the past or whatever. I mean,
I would slowly turn around and walk in the opposite direction.
Leave your keyboard, yeah. I don't know. I'd rather they didn't do that, because I look after the YouTube channel. It goes to my email, so I get them all emailed to me.
And it kind of feels like they're saying that to you.
To me, in my face, and I find it very hard to resist going, turn into a keyboard warrior and telling them all to stick it. But no, it's not. God, I mean, it's amazing to be compared to such a great band. I mean, I don't think we're even close, to be honest, but maybe when we've done 15 albums or whatever, we'll, you know. But I'll just say maybe there's more things to the sound, and there's more. It's quite I do find it funny with YouTube when someone will say it in a post, and then three posts later, someone else will go, oh, they sound like Jethro Tull. It's like, well, if you read down, someone has already said it. I find that a bit... read on the internet.
No way, Jethro Tull. God, oh, we never thought of that. Yeah.
I don't know if you've had a comparison to the Stone Roses before. What that was one that
Second Coming. There's a couple. Yeah.
Well, I was listening to Second Coming.
From a bass and drums point of view, that's hugely flattering. So I'd take that. Yeah.
It is the kind of bass groove.
Probably more likely to have slipped into all of our consciousness than Jethro Tull, because we grew up with, listening to Stone Roses.
I spent about 1 week trying to learn the bass part to the first Breaking Into Heaven off the Second Coming. It's a hugely psychedelic sounding track, you know.
If that come out now, it would be classed as probably psych rock.
I just think it's brilliant. You know, I mean, I think it took them a long time. You know, we talk about taking a long time to do something, but they, you know, they had unlimited time, and but I don't know, there's something pretty magic about that record.
I haven't listened to that in ages. I'm going to have to dig that out.
John Squire's he was him and Nick McCabe out of the Verve when I was like 11 and 12, because I'd be about that in 94, 95. They were massive on me, because before that I'd only heard of Chuck Berry, Mark Knopfler and Eric Clapton and Richard Thompson through my day. They were fantastic, but they were the first guitarists that were like of my age group that I discovered.
Yeah, I suppose John Squire was like your guitarist rather than your dad's guitarist.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, and I saw when I heard that Love Spreads thing, and I think Dawny Reach has got a bit of Love Spreads may have filtered into that. And I learned to play slide guitar from listening to Love Spreads, so he's a bit of a hero, really. Yeah, he's
I think
good.
Jack had always, like, you saw a Ian Brown gig, didn't you, and just decided, that's it, that's it. I want to my vocals.
That's how I want to sing. Yeah, definitely.
So, I suppose as a band, I mean, have you got a kind of philosophy or, a kind of, I don't know, maybe like a maxim or something that you kind of live by that you think's important as musicians, or is it kind of more fluid and organic than that?
Definitely try and don't think about just doing something that's going to get some immediate attention and pack gigs out. It's about making something that people are going to remember and having, I don't want to say heritage, but leave something to leave behind.
Yeah, I think the two things that have kind of reverberated around my head the last few years is, like, one, just enjoy yourself, because no one else will enjoy it if you're not enjoying it. And there's not much, with the way the music industry is, there's not much else to be gained from it. And also, try and leave behind the absolute best records you can, because, you know, there's a lot of stuff flying around, and like, what people say about it now doesn't matter. It's what people, if people are still listening to those in 5, 10, 15, 20 years, then you can feel like you've actually achieved something, I think.
So, I mean, this is kind of turning it a bit political then. What do you think of the Culture Minister's comments recently when she said that art should be economically justified and basically be there to make money rather than have cultural value?
I think it should be artistically justified. I think they're both.
Woo!
There's a quote. Yeah.
You've got the same boy there.
Also. I think that's absolutely nonsense because there's so many kind of case studies of like films and music that on paper doesn't work at all, but actually ended up making a lot of money because someone took a chance, someone did something that was a bit weird, was a bit off the beaten track. And if you don't invest in those things, if you don't take chances, then what do we get? We get like just homogenised rubbish.
That's I'd never heard that. That's quite worrying, actually, really. But yeah, these artists here in their lifetime were nothing, and then going to be the greatest.
In Canada, they get our bands get huge grants for doing tours and records, and it's just a thing they take for granted over there. That's what happens, and it's. What would
we do if we had our funding taken away from us? We'd have to, I don't know, get jobs and struggle to live and make music on the side.
I think that's another reason why the motto for the band is the fact that because we're all working and this is our only like escape.
This is our holiday.
So it's make the most of it while we can.
25 days of work a year, pretty much everyone's playing a gig. So. Yeah. And every week.
Enjoy it.
So what are your day jobs then?
I work near Skipton. I'm like a graphic designer.
I work for Bedford Borough Council.
Rock and roll.
I'm a sound engineer, live sound engineer. I'm a technical manager at a venue in Islington, in London.
I'm a support worker in the NHS. I help homeless people get access to healthcare.
Brilliant.
And a taekwondo teacher.
Yeah, that's not my other hobby, I guess. Yeah. He's
got political views and he'll kill you.
So you're the one not to be messed with then?
Yeah. Well, I don't know about that. I don't think anyone should be messed with. That's why I definitely got involved in that.
Right. I mean, so going forward then, I mean, what's next? I mean, you've got the new album, you've got the tour. I mean, what's kind of... Beyond this.
Beyond that, who knows?
USA.
Yeah, we're going to America in October. Beyond that, I don't think we've got many plans. We've kind of talked a little bit about new music and stuff, but I think there is plans to put an EP out a little bit later with some tracks that that we've done like since the album. But I mean, it won't. It'll be like one or two things that we've recorded since then, and like some of the tracks off the album may be extended. Other than that, I don't know really.
is there anything you want to add at all, or is there anything you'd like me to have asked you?
Be good to plug the excellent Baron who've been touring with us. They're sound checking in the background, and they've been absolutely amazing each night. Really.
Yeah, unfortunately, tomorrow's the last night with them, but
they're doing London as well. Yeah.
Oh yeah, sorry, yeah, they're doing London on the 4th. But absolutely amazing. Like I think as well, they're kind of a perfect band to support us. We have been really lucky with the supports we've had on tours.
We've always tried to make sure that if we've picked the support band, we've always obviously tried to pick a band we like. We've had some really good bands like Diagonal, who also share a drummer with Baron, and The Liftmen, who are excellent.
From Bristol, they're amazing.